Hi, this is Now I See a Person Institute. I'm Emma McIntosh, and on this podcast is Dr. Susan Swim and David Abramovich. And today we're going to be talking about, we've been reflecting a lot on older literature and how it relates to today. And yeah, I think Dr. Swim, you're going to talk about an interesting article.
Yes, thank you, Emma.
Worry.
So, thank you. We have been so interested in sharing, using this time to share the ideas of our clients and our interactions with them at Now I See a Person Institute, especially in the ideas of that they help give us and how healing occurs for them. And as we all know, that healing does not occur for everyone in the same manner. And when we were preparing for a conference and another article, one of the past came just flooding through, and that was the work of Harry Gelishan. And I can remember in 1998, we were all doing a invitation for a symposium prior to a conference at the Texas Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. And the ideas at that point in time was to talk about the significance of being able to look at clients, not just as a diagnosis, not just as having a disease, but including the etiology, the ontology of the person. That who that person is and what makes them unique from other people that might be experiencing the same symptoms. And so the title of this letter of invitation was called The Distancing of Mental Health, and it was by Harold Gelishan of the Houston-Galveston Institute, of which we are a part of. And it has been, it was then put into the journal Systemic Therapies in 2017, if anyone would want to look at that. But one of the things that he talked about in that invitation was how words can describe and often treat people without looking at the full picture of who that person is, and that words are incredibly powerful. And he related to those words as deficiency language, and that, and I'll just read a little bit of that, and that they create a world of description that understands only through what is wrong, broken, absent, or insufficient. And he said within this letter, our conclusion is that the deficiency language has created a world of mental health that at that point in time says compared to a black hole, which is little hope to escape. And it was a metaphor for that often we are not able to see the person. And Now I See a Person Institute is built upon the premises of seeing the person, not just seeing that there is a diagnosis, but how do we help that person who is in front of us see that person and their family for the unique characteristics that they have and collaboratively come up with ideas that can help alleviate the symptoms that they're having. So I was wondering if maybe David or Emma, you would like to comment on how this type of work of Harry Gelishan and others have influenced the work that you do at Now I See a Person Institute, and also influenced how our clients talk about how change occurs.
Sure. This is David Abramovich, and yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I don't really think about Harry's work while I'm doing therapy, but then after I'm done with a client, and I often think about like the therapy session and the fact that we weren't talking about problems or diagnoses or anything of that sort, just about life and hope, and focusing on strengths, not deficiencies, and focusing on the environment, not what's wrong within us, but what's wrong with the environment. That, you know, a mere change in the environment can create a change in symptomology. And then thirdly, I think we also talk about, you know, how, or what we don't talk about is, you know, the genesis or the, you know, the epistemology of where these symptoms came from, like the trauma or what have you. We just sort of talk about the trauma and how it's presented in real time, in the present, and how we can co-create a narrative that is that is laden with positive, you know, attributes, and not laden with deficiency. And all that comes from, you know, Harry Glishan's work. And although, you know, we're not thinking about it during the session, after the session, it's very apparent that we are talking about, you know, a model that is open to so many different possibilities rather than restrictive, such as the DSM and, you know, labeling and diagnoses, because once that happens, the world becomes very, very closed. But when you talk about hope and talk about problems and issues in the context of, you know, you don't talk about the, you know, the epistemology, you talk about strengths and you talk about the environment, and then it leads to a rich conversation where hope can occur and where hope can be sustainable.
So I'm just gonna, like, talk about that a little bit, what you talked about. So David, I think that we need to include, like, within Harry Glishan, because there was a lot of people that contributed to this, to this letter of invitation, and that was, of course, Harlene Anderson and further colleagues of Lynn Hoffman and Kim Gergen and some others that were all in conversation about these ideas in 1998, which now seems such a long time ago. But I do think that, you know, it's that epistemology that we look at is the epistemology of the client, and not the epistemology or the ideology or the ontology of a book, right? Or what is basically sometimes taught in school is just to look at a client through a lenses of a diagnosis, because a client is so much more than just a diagnosis. And in order for them to, in our opinion, to achieve the wellness that they need, is that they have to look at themselves outside of that limited picture. And so I think what happens with our clients is that they come in with a diagnosis, but that diagnosis is not seen as the main way to be able to engage in conversations. And so those conversations then occur that are about the trauma, that are about what led up to that trauma, and how they would like that trauma not to be there. But it's all in real time. You're very correct. And it's all about how they explain it, not how it's explained in a book, or not how it's explained that you need to do this and that in order to create alternatives to wellness. But it's actually incorporates each person as that unique person that they are. And it does take into consideration, you know, your environment, your culture, what's happening with you, and so many type of variables that I think sometimes get missed just when we're talking about a diagnosis and seeing through the lens of, unfortunately, deficiency language that's in a diagnosis. Because a diagnosis can't talk about what wonderful positive things are going on with a person, what type of heroes there are that are transcending trauma every day. So heroes of the client who is experiencing the symptoms and heroes of the family who is attempting to support the client through what's happening with them at that point in time. And I think that these ideas are so much needed to be brought out again. And I'm so happy to be reading the literature in which I'm constantly finding that people are writing about how the distress of others cannot be limited to a book. So Emma, I was wondering what your thoughts are on this as well.
I'm just like in doing the qualitative research at the Institute, you know, you come across everybody's stories and how they feel that they've transcended or they've transformed, or, you know, there's been this shift in life becoming better for them. And it's to do, they report, you know, the people that are using our service report that it's all what you and David just said, you know, it's about treating them as a person who has lots to offer in the world and lots, you know, of values, their culture, their stories, their strength, their experiences, their talents, their hopes and dreams for the future. There's a lot more to people, and certainly they feel like they've been honored when they've come to our service. And that those, all of them, you know, all of the stories have been honored, and that they've been listened to and just treated with humility. And that strongly comes across in the research that we've been doing. So I love the work of Harry Gulishan. I always have him in the back of my mind. And yeah. So that's my thought.
I think that both of your ideas are just so important. And I guess one of the things that I want to leave today is with thinking about the humility of us as therapists and how we have to bring that humility and that openness and that willingness to hear what the other is talking about instead of hearing what perhaps people say about people that are bipolar or schizophrenic or all types of different types of diagnosis. I mean, one of the reasons I think also that we're talking about this today is that one of our clients was talking about that they were diagnosed as bipolar and they knew that they weren't. And they had a very difficult time being able to prove that wasn't the symptoms that they were experiencing, and that instead it was trauma and grief, and that there wasn't kind of up and down. It was just a down for a long period of time. And, you know, I think that a lot of times that clients have to struggle to feel to be heard so that we can see their complete picture and try to help honor that complete picture for their search for wellness. So if you have further questions or further ideas on this podcast, you can reach out to us at Now I See a Person, and we would be happy to talk about this and talk about this further in some of our workshops that we do and our certificate program. So, thank you.